The Monty Show, Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018. The night that the Cubs season comes to an end. We are watching the Cubs and Rockies in the wild card game. And we are having a fierce, I would dare say, argument as Ben Zobrist strikes out on a terrible at-bat. So we'll talk a little bit of Cubs. Then we got to talk a lot of BYU, a lot of Pac-12, a lot of Utah Utes, a lot of college football. We got some Jimma, some LeBron, NFL Sunday Ticket, Brooks Koepka, exploding a woman's face. Donald Trump apparently is going to send us all a text tomorrow. Yeah, you know. So we got a good mix of stuff. And oh my goodness. Okay, so we're watching the Rockies and Cubs game.
By the way, it's always an awful idea to watch baseball while we're doing this.
It really is.
Awful idea. Dull. I'm not sure what's a worse idea. Us talking about the game while it's in the background or there at bats. I'm not sure.
Dahl just dropped a gimme pop-up can of corn fly ball into right field. Chris Bryant flies out to right on a terrible pitch. What looked like a terrible pitch. And Dahl is just absolutely butchered it. Misplayed it. And does Ian Happ get to third base on this? No, he doesn't. So here's the situation. This is the debate. And if you saw this game, cool. If you didn't, I'm going to just set the table real quick. It's the Cubs and the Rockies at Wrigley Field in a wild card game. Essentially the playing game to get to the Brewers tomorrow. John Lester gets the start tonight for the Cubs. You know that this team is struggling offensively. To the point where they just don't score runs. That's the bottom line. When the Cubs lose, they generally get shut out or score a run. So you have Anthony Rizzo at the plate, grounding into a double play, and ending the inning after they gave you a gimme base hit with Chris Bryant, right? Terrible swing at a terrible pitch. So you know you're not going to score a run tonight. You essentially have to go into this game if you're John Lester thinking you're getting shut out. What did he do? He walks the leadoff hitter to start the game. Walks the leadoff hitter, throws a ball down the middle of the plate to DJ LeMahieu. So the rule on beating the Rockies, Jake, how do you beat the Rockies?
Yeah, you can't let LeMahieu and Arenado beat you and Blackman.
You got to keep Blackman and Arenado, or Blackman and LeMahieu off the bases. That's what you have to do. He walks Blackman and throws a 89-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle of the plate, which LeMahieu deposits into the ivy for a ground rule double. The next pitch, the guy flies out deep to score Blackman. They're down 1-0 with one out in the first and a runner on second. That's not a good start to the game. And so what we were talking about before the game, before the show started, is that I think John Lester did not do what needed to be done to win this game tonight. And your opinion was what?
That I think he's done what he needs to do. It's one run in a postseason game. One run. Not his fault that Anthony Rizzo can't come through in the clutch.
The issue tonight is the issue that this team's had for 5 months. They struggle in the first inning. Cub pitching has one of the worst first inning ERAs all year long. Kyle Hendricks, like everybody. Terrible in the first inning. So you walk the leadoff guy in the playoffs. It's just not good enough. I'm so tired, like, listening to the score today, and Joe Maddon's on, and we're patting Joe on the back, and what a great job you've done, and injury. They haven't done a great job. Why has Pedro Strop missed essentially the entire month of September? Because it was cool to let him hit. Well, it wasn't cool to let him hit. He shouldn't have hit. So when he did hit, he wanted to beat out a ball at first base, and he pulled his hamstring, missed an entire month. And why is Pedro Strop so important? Well, because he's your closer, and Wade Davis is gone, so he's your closer. And you signed Brandon Morrow, who you signed to a 2-year deal, who blew out his bicep. He's done for the year. So Mike Montgomery's your fifth starter because you signed Yu Darvish to one of the worst contracts of the offseason. And you didn't go and trade for a pitcher that was an ace. Like, you just didn't do that. And then here's the other problem. So now Anthony Rizzo grounds into a double play to end your only scoring threat of the first 6 innings. That's the first time they've had a runner in scoring position tonight. And what does Chavez do? comes in and gives up a rocket single to center field. Like, sorry, dude. I'm not going to sit here and kiss their ass because they're the Chicago Cubs who won the World Series 2 years ago. Because they're just not a good team right now.
Yeah, I just think overall, like, yeah, I agree that they haven't done enough and didn't do enough. Specifically, Theo didn't do enough in the offseason, and they're in this position right now because of that. But I don't think that, you know, railing on John Lester or, you know, any of that stuff, we just disagree on that. I think you can definitely complain about their inconsistency at the plate. And, you know, Rizzo just, why would you swing at the first pitch and try to be, because that's what he did. He swung at the first pitch, tried to hit a home run. And what did you do? You rolled it over, because that's what happens in baseball.
Why is it okay for John Lester to have the first inning that he had tonight? Why is that okay? Why are you willing to give him a free pass on that?
Because I'm looking at the whole picture of the outing. Like,
here's the whole picture of the outing.
Yeah, that's what you think the whole picture is.
If he didn't walk that hitter, if he didn't walk Charlie Blackmon, I'd rather Charlie Blackmon hit a home run to lead off the game than take a walk. Because it just leads to these bigger innings, and you throw a ton of pitches, and you've got Freeland going for the Rockies tonight. You know that he's going to have 10-pitch innings every single inning because the Cubs are terrible at the plate. Their approach is terrible at the plate. The way they go after guys is terrible at the plate. It's why they're not the best team in the division. It's why the Brewers are a better baseball team. They have a better starting staff, and they have a better offensive team. They went and got Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich. And Yelich had an MVP-caliber season and should, I think, win the MVP. It's not Javier Baez. It is Christian Yelich. They won the NL Central. They're a better team than the Cubs because of those moves. It's hard to argue that. And the Rockies are trying to give you this game. Like, and this is the other thing. The Rockies get a leadoff single out of Ian Desmond. Dahl flies out deep to right. Desmond tries to take second and gets thrown out. Actually, it was left, excuse me. He flew out to Chris Bryant in left, who threw out Desmond at second base. Like, they're trying to give this game away. Like, you're dropping fly balls and getting thrown out at second base. I mean, it's amazing to me watching the way the Rockies are playing. And they know they can do that because the Cubs will not score a run tonight. So I just get worn out on the back padding and Theo's grade and, oh, what a great job Joe Maddon's done, you know, with Benny's Beverage Depot in Chicago and selling T-shirts. I'd rather win games and not have them endorse products and stores and cars and mm-hmm. boats and sell T-shirts, and that's all cool. I want to win games.
Yeah. No, I understand. I get why you're frustrated, but I just think there's when it comes to games like this, I mean, you know, I guess it's just exemplified. I mean, what they didn't do is hurting them. So we're seeing that. So I think, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably better they lose tonight.
I think it is. I put it on Facebook and all my Chicago friends lost their mind over it. Like, I'd rather them lose tonight because they're done. They're out of gas. You have to go to Milwaukee and play a playoff series tomorrow if you win tonight. You're going to lose that series no matter what happens tonight. So just get knocked out now. You're not a World Series contender. Honestly, I'm not even being a bitter Cub fan. You are not a contender to win the National League Championship. You're not, because you're not better than the Dodgers. I don't think you're better than the Brewers. Are you better than the Braves? You're probably on par with the Braves, but the Braves have better pitching than you do. I mean, Foltynewicz is a much better pitcher than anybody the Cubs can put out there. Hamels, I mean, I would take him over John Lester at this point. He's younger, throws harder, has better command. You know, like, the Braves are probably a better team.
Yeah.
You know, when Acuña Jr.'s hitting and playing well, Freeman's
really
an MVP
team.
Candidate. I mean, they have weapons. The Cubs do not. So, I could keep, like, today on the score in Chicago, because I listened to a good part of that today. They're talking about they just had bad luck with weather in the schedule. Well, so did everybody. You know, like, what are the Cubs the only team that got rained out? Is that what happened?
The Cubs are the only team that had to go to Washington on whatever that was.
Sure. Baseball teams travel every day.
See, you're just so negative on them, like on everything. You're so unwilling.
Because they're not talented enough to be the best team in the National League. So why do we talk about them like they are?
So let's focus on, so here's where you're at. Let's focus on the fact that they're not good enough to win the National League instead of focusing on the contributions that you're getting out of what you have. Because you're not fixing anything in the middle of the season. It's just not happening.
Okay, so you're not fixing things in the middle of the season. Then why do we have a trade deadline? Then why did the Dodgers the Dodgers go out and get Machado at shortstop?
Because they needed a shortstop.
Because they needed a bat and they needed defense.
Cubs don't need. They don't need bats. They need a better approach.
Right, but the Dodgers addressed a need. Think about that. The LA Dodgers, who did they add to this team that's making a difference right now? Number one, Machado, and number two, Walker Buehler. A guy they developed and a guy they went out and bought. What's the difference in that between the Cubs? The Cubs went and bought pitching, fell flat on their face, miserable, three pitchers, complete busts. Your best reliever is...
So who's the third?
Brandon Morrow.
No.
Chatwood, Yu Darvish, and Brandon Morrow. Three massive busts. And you're tied to those guys for multiple years. Yu Darvish has the potential. Because my feeling is Yu Darvish probably doesn't even pitch this coming season. He's going to wind up having Tommy John surgery. Just a guess, when I hear forearm issues and stress reactions in the elbow, he's going to wind up having Tommy John surgery, right? So let's say that happens the first month of the season. Maybe he gets through spring training. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. He's going to wind up having Tommy John surgery. He's going to have missed all of 2018. Essentially, I think he made 8 starts. Most of 2018, all of 2019, and a good portion of 2020. Probably the All-Star break in 2020. And you're going to have paid him $75 million to do that. You don't recover from that. That's Josh Hamilton. That's Albert Pujols the last 2 years in Anaheim. Like, you just don't recover from that. The difference is, Walker Buehler came up through the system, so you didn't buy the pitching. And you went out and bought a guy who's proven as one of the best offensive defensive players in baseball. The Cubs did the opposite. Like, they didn't need to buy bats. They developed all their bats. They went and bought pitching, and it's been an abject failure across the board. Like, even Hamels. Hamels was not good. His first couple of starts, he was unbelievable. He came way back to earth the last 2-3 starts of the season. And it's, you know, he's just okay. He's not great. Am I being too harsh on that?
I get the comparison to the Dodgers, but I just feel like the season just needs to end because I just think you're very frustrated with the whole thing. I don't think you're...
Am I frustrated or am I truth-telling?
Well, I think you're 80% truth-telling, and I think a lot of it is you're frustrated. Yeah, I would say it's 80-20. I'm not disagreeing with a lot of what you're saying. To be clear, I'm not saying you're wrong. But I am saying when it comes to in-game moments, we disagree on a lot of stuff.
I'm a firm believer that when the playoffs get here, and that was essentially a month ago for the Cubs, right? They said September is when the playoffs started. And then they had their team meeting a week ago for the playoffs. The postseason's here. The at-bats have gotten worse, not better. The first inning problems have not gone away. You know, losing to St. Louis when they were getting their doors blown off by everybody else, you knew that you had Milwaukee playing Detroit. You think you'd have turned it up a notch. And again, I just point to the fact that the Brewers were 5 games out at the beginning of September. And again, on the radio today, oh, they had one of the best Septembers in history. Who cares? They were 5 games out. Just play average, play 600 baseball, because that's what this team's more than capable of playing 600 baseball. Couldn't do it. Because their approach is miserable. Like, Javier Baez is at the plate in a one-run game. You're trailing 1-0 in the 7th. Getting into a dominant Rockies bullpen. Freeland is still out there at 69 pitches, I think it is. And he's just swinging away like, you know, we're in batting practice, so just keep chopping away. You know, like, in the game yesterday, late in the game, he struck out on a pitch at his shoulder blades. There was no way you were hitting that fastball.
Mm-hmm.
From, I think it was Hader was throwing for Milwaukee, and you've got Javier Baez, the MVP, striking out in a playoff game where you'd be home on the couch watching the Brewers and Rockies tonight, and now he's going to pop out to first base on another terrible pitch. Like, is that mental fatigue?
Yeah, could be.
Or just really crappy at-bats?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. Like, yeah, you're right. They're tired. They're clearly tired. We've been talking about that since the beginning of September, that they're clearly tired. But, you know, that's why I say it's probably better they lose tonight. Go home. Like, get some rest. Like, get away from a baseball field for a while.
But you're talking about it, the tired thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockies, 24 hours ago, were playing in Los Angeles.
Right, but the Rockies haven't dealt with what the Cubs have dealt with this year.
It was one trip to Washington.
I'm
like, you left half your roster home.
I'm talking about injuries. I'm talking about constantly having to battle something or other on this team the entire year. Whether it's pitching or bad at-bats or whatever it is, they're constantly battling something. The Rockies haven't had to deal with that. The Rockies have had decent pitching for most of the year. They've had their usuals do what their usuals do. And they've been just grinding it out with the Dodgers. That's it.
Or maybe the Rockies are a better team.
Okay, great. Let's say the Cubs suck. They're the worst team in postseason.
I'm not saying that they suck.
But that's where you're at. You're
no, I'm not. I'm at a point where I'm tired of hearing that the freaking Cubs are this great juggernaut of a baseball team. They're not. They're average. They are a middle-of-the-pack team. From the time the calendar hits September, they're an average team. They're not. Their at-bats are embarrassingly bad. You fired Dave Maley because you said that the average in the OPS was too low. You gained 10 points on your average, and you lost 30 on your OPS. Is that tired, or is Chili Davis just not a great hitting coach? Because I haven't seen Albert Almora advance. Have you? Like, I haven't seen him get better. Ian Happ is not better. Javier Baez, okay, Javier Baez is having less at-bats where he swings at a pitch that's in the dugout. Right? He's not swinging at those pitches anymore. So he's getting better. Now, you want to talk about injuries? Sure. Chris Bryant's probably going to have shoulder surgery. But I'm looking at Daniel Murphy, who's supposed to be one of the best professional hitters. He's really good at rolling out to second base for like the last 3 weeks because it feels like that's all he does. Because he doesn't hit home runs and he doesn't run the bases well. So this great trade deadline pickup that you made has not been great. We talked more about the fact that Daniel Murphy doesn't believe in gay marriage than we have about the fact that the guy is an average player. Like we on the show yesterday, we talked about, are you bringing Daniel Murphy back next year?
Yeah, I probably would.
I probably wouldn't bring him or Zobrist back.
So who are you going to put there?
I'll go find somebody. Go find somebody. You're the Cubs with all this money. I got to pay $15 for a beer at Wrigley Field to watch Daniel Murphy play second base. Sorry, I'm not. That's just not good enough. What I'm frustrated about is nobody wants to talk about this. Everybody in Chicago just wants to say, oh, you guys are great. It's been such a fun year at Wrigley Field. What are the new upgrades next year? Like, what's the construction going to be this year at Wrigley? You know, like, hey, are we going to get that hotel with all those cool amenities in the parking lot? That's what the Cubs have become. That's what's so disappointing. This was supposed to be a dynasty. Oh, Bryant and Rizzo and, you know, this great Gold Glove infield, and we were going to have 10 years of these guys playing together. Well, somebody forgot that we needed pitching, too, which apparently the Cubs don't develop. You know, like, oh, hey, Dylan Maples is terrible. And, like, you're Carl Edwards. What's wrong with Carl Edwards? Somebody explain to me. Steve Cishek can pitch until his arm falls off and be effective. Carl Edwards can't throw anything but a fastball down the middle. Like, where's the development on this guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm frustrated about. Guys lose games, but Daniel Murphy taking a 93-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle of the plate. When you're trailing and the tying runs on first base, are you taking that pitch? Like, help me understand. That's not being mentally tired. Is that mentally tired?
Yeah, I mean, clearly just not locked in, that's for sure. I don't know what it is.
We got Daniel Murphy because he was so awesome at Wrigley Field. Wow. I think he's got one home run at Wrigley this year. And now he's down 0-2 because he took a pitch down the cock and he's about to roll over on a ball on the outside corner for a double play. Like, do you want to bet a car payment on that? Anyways, it's been 20 minutes. We should probably move on. You do not, and I'm sorry. I admit that a lot of the time I'm a miserable person to talk Cubs with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even when they're winning, I'm probably miserable. I don't know. I don't remember this team winning much this year.
Yeah, we know. We get it.
That's probably the bitter Cub fan in me. You know, like you would think that I'd be thrilled that the Cubs are winning, and there you go. Daniel Murphy lines out to shortstop. Nice play, though, by the shortstop. Trevor Story.
Better it's a nice play. It's a diving play. He made a great play.
Yeah.
Murph did what he was supposed to do. Oppo approach. Trevor Story made a great play.
Yeah. Yeah, he dove. He didn't have to dive. He fell down to protect the ball. Anyway, point is, I'm not going to cry in my milk and look at Bud Black. This is why, and this is the Joe Maddon conversation. He leaves John Lester in an inning too long. Bud Black sees a hard line drive when he's up by a run in the seventh with two outs. Oh, there's two outs in the seventh. Why are you going to take Freeland out? Because he's getting hit hard now. So let's move on. So Freeland leaves. I love that move by Bud Black.
Hmm.
So, anyway. Hi, Jake.
Hey. You want him to be your manager now? When's the last time he won a World Series?
I think Joe Maddon's a really decent manager. I don't think he's some voodoo witch doctor.
Who's better than him?
I don't know. I wouldn't mind Joe Girardi. I think Joe does a really nice job. We need somebody that can handle a pitching staff. If this Cubs team, frankly, the offense is perplexing. It's what was the story last year? Couldn't hit with guys in scoring position. This year, everybody strikes out and has terrible approaches and ground ball rates that are through the roof. You know, like it's. I don't know what the problem. I don't know. But the coaching staff changes they made, Theo Epstein said after last year, I vividly remember it, on CSN Chicago, Theo Epstein said after last year that Joe Maddon will have anybody on the coaching staff he wants. Money's not an option or not a problem. Money is, you know, we're good. So he fires his hitting coach. You know, he fired Chris Bosio 2 years ago and replaces him with Hickey. The pitching staff's been terrible. And then he fires Maley to bring in Chili Davis. Now the hitting is gone in the crapper. You know.
Yeah.
Is that his coaches or is that Joe Maddon? These are his guys, the guys he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of both, and I think the players are responsible for how awful their bats are. No coach is going to, you know, control at-bats. You can tell them to, hey, have a good approach, but at the end of the day, it's up to them to go up and have a good approach.
Yeah. The luster of the Cubs is quickly diminishing. They will not be a dynasty. They won't. I mean, that now, if you'd have won this year, if you'd have won the World Series this year, okay, two out of three, you could be the Giants. Giants were a dynasty. You know, Kane, Lincecum, Bumgarner, like, those guys turned that team into a great every other year champion quality team. Cubs will never be that. Will BYU ever be that in football?
No, they're awful too. They're embarrassing. They don't put up runs either.
I'm really surprised at how negative the reaction has been for BYU coming out of the Washington game. And I think a lot of it is that expectations, I think, are way out of whack here. We talked about this last Friday on the show. I did not expect them to go to Washington and win. Now, I didn't expect them to get dominated in all three phases. I really didn't. But that's what happened. But they have a legitimate shot to be 6-2 before Halloween arrives. If I'd have told you that in fall camp, you'd have been thrilled with that, right?
Yeah. But that's before you went to Camp Randall. That's sure. Before you went and got an impressive win. That's before you changed the expectation.
Yeah. The Rockies just threw a wild pitch and advanced the tying run to second base.
Great. The Cubs still won't win.
He brings in Adam Ottavino, who's been a great reliever, by the way, Bud Black. And instead of leaving the catcher there, he puts in Drew Butera, who missed a fastball in the outside corner. So you get what you pay for, I guess. But why is it such a problem that you had a one-off game? Because this really was, if you look at the Washington game for BYU, what is it? Because you were really disappointed on when we talked about this Sunday morning.
It's disappointing. It's a stretch to say it was embarrassing because it's not, because it's Washington. But if you're a program, if you're Kalani Sitake, it's not good enough. You want to rip the Cubs? Let's rip BYU. Grow up. Like, play better. It's not, I get, you want, you're the guy who leans on, oh, they're so athletic, and, you know, Washington is this great defense, which they are. No defense is good enough to stop any football team from scoring a single point in an entire football game.
Well, first of all, they didn't get completely shut. Did they get shut out?
I believe they did. I believe it was 28-0.
No, I have to go back on the, anyway, it wasn't 28-0. I don't remember the final scores here nor there. They did not look great offensively. I agree with you on that. There's no question that they did not look great offensively.
Oh, excuse me, 35-7.
35-7, yeah. I agree with you that they didn't look great. I put a lot more of that on the fact that Washington is deep. They've got dual defensive coordinators, and they are arguably the most athletic defense in the country. I don't think they're quite as good as Utah. I think they're very close. They might be level. Utah's just a dominant defense, I think. But they're very close. And guys like Ben Burkervin, and like, they just controlled the run. They hit hard. They moved well. I mean, they're on another athletic level. BYU cannot compete at that level. And then you look at the fact that Washington came out offensively and just looked as good as they've looked. You and I have seen, I've seen at least three games from Washington, and I haven't seen Jake Browning throw the ball that well. He looked like a legit, really good quarterback, Pac-12 level quarterback. Is that because BYU is bad defensively? I don't think they're bad defensively. I think they don't have athletes who can stay with Salvon Ahmed. They didn't have an answer for Ahmed. Not one time did they have an answer for him. And then you look at how Myles Gaskin was used in that game. You know, he gives you, I think, one of the better performances that we've seen out of Gaskin this year. Caught the ball, had that one catch, and then I thought ran the ball really well. So, you know, for my money, I just think BYU didn't play well in a really tough environment against a really athletic team. So I hesitate to say that BYU's falling apart. I look at the numbers for BYU. I think their biggest problem Saturday in Seattle was their defense tried to play hero ball. You had guys who forgot what they were coached because they wanted to make big plays and they wanted to save the team. That's always a recipe for disaster. And then I look at the fact that on offense, you're playing 9 freshmen and 5 sophomores. That's 14 underclassmen that are playing heavy rotation for you offensively.
Yeah.
You're just not good enough right now. And you're still going to be probably 6-2 come Halloween. Because if you look at who BYU plays, their toughest game's probably Northern Illinois. You know, and that's a good team. You've got your rivalry game with Utah State this weekend, and that is going to be a ball buster. Thankfully, that's at home, which starts a 3-game stretch of home games. Utah State, Hawaii, you are better than Hawaii. And I think you're better at home than NIU. You could potentially, before you make that trip to Boise, you could be 6-2.
Yeah, that would be great. For sure, that would be great.
Yeah, and then UMass, New Mexico State, and then you get the Utes. And that's going to be a really difficult game, I think. So
they better not get destroyed by the Utes. That needs to be a competitive game.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Boy, Drew Butera is just crapping himself at home plate trying to catch for the Rockies. The pass ball, and now it's catcher's interference, as Tommy La Stella was pinch hitting for the Cubs, swung and hit Butera's glove before he made contact with the baseball. And so now the bases are loaded with one out for the Cubs on errors all over the place for Colorado. But I look at those 3 home games. I don't care what – if you go 6-2 going to Boise, you don't care what happened to Washington. Now you lose to Utah State this weekend and you lose 2 in a row. Now you're in not good shape.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I just think we disagree on that performance. I just don't know that's for me, that's not quite good enough. I thought they got shut out. They scored 7 points. Okay.
You felt like they got shut out.
Yeah, you got dominated. You were never in that game. It wasn't even close. Like,
But Tanner Mangum actually played solid football. Going back and watching that game a second time, he didn't turn the ball over and he didn't throw a touchdown, but he was not scared. He was not rushed. His eyes were not on the pass rush. His eyes were down the field. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you got to be better.
Would you keep playing Tanner Mangum? I think I would.
Yeah, I absolutely would. Yeah. You have so much to lose. You cannot. You're not going to a freshman, or I don't want to hear any of
true
that
freshman.
Garbage.
Yeah.
You're not
Utah, who we're going to talk about here in 2 minutes. You're not Utah struggling to score points.
I mean, you're not Utah, who's in the Pac-12 and has one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country. You're BYU. You're a team that is largely hated on and consistently an underdog, and someone who you could be the best team in the country. You could beat Roll Tide Alabama and Nick Saban, and you'd still be an underdog. It doesn't matter.
That's amazing. But I think the quarterback thing is interesting. Let's get into Utah a little bit, because you're last in the Pac-12 South right now by default. You are coming out of a stretch of Washington State where you got wrecked in the state of Washington. And I don't mean that you played both games, because obviously you played Washington at Rice-Eccles, but the state of Washington owned you this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always talk about, can you win California? You know, can you beat UCLA, USC, and Stanford? And the Utes have done that, by the way. But you couldn't get out of Washington, either one of those teams. Like, that's terrible. And now you're going to Stanford this weekend, who's going to be all pissed off about what happened in Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think Stanford's going to win the game, because the Utes don't have any kind of offensive game. And this is what I always say about great defenses. They're only great as long as they're fresh. You cannot put a great defense on the field when they're tired. I don't care. Like, you could have the most athletic body. If you're tired and the guy you're facing is fresh, it's not even close.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna try and beat Stanford, that's about the offense, not the defense. The defense will do its job. It's whether or not the offense can get up and down the field.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly how Utah looks. But what I think is interesting is that you know right now that Huntley's not your quarterback. You know that he's a guy, and Jason Hayward strikes out on a pitch that was a foot low, like well off the plate, strikes out swinging, leaves the bases loaded. You're going to lose 1-0 tonight. I'm just telling you. Anyway, I think you know right now that you have a quarterback issue, and we talked about this a lot this past weekend because of the quarterback performances we saw. We saw Ian Book get the job 2 weeks ago and just come in and dominate.
Took that thing by the neck, man.
We saw Haskins at Ohio State win the job and fall, and he's dominated. McSorley at Penn State. Now, they wound up losing the game on an inexplicable decision by their coach, but McSorley dominated. Tagovailoa at Alabama. Jalen Hurts is on the bench, and Tag is just dominating. You know when you have the goods at quarterback. The Utes don't have the goods at quarterback. And I think when you're 2-8 in your last 10 Pac-12 games, do you realize that about Utah? In the conference, they're 2-8 in their last 10 games. That's shocking for Kyle Whittingham. And this is a guy in Witt that I think we all realize has always struggled to put an offense together. Whether it's constantly changing coordinators or systems, or he has just really struggled to properly recruit the quarterback position and keep consistency in the coordinator position. And I think that's biting him right now on the backside, because you finally have some continuity with your offensive coordinator, but you don't have a quarterback right now that's starting for you that can move the football.
No, you don't. And it just, anytime you don't have a quarterback that can produce for you on any level, because they really don't. I mean, it's not as though he can run, can't really throw, not great in the pocket, in my opinion. Like, doesn't have a great presence about him. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have the goods, as you say. So when you don't have that, your defense is on the field extra time. You're constantly fighting an uphill battle against whoever it is that you're playing. You know, so it doesn't surprise me they have that awful record in the Pac-12. I mean, that's just where they're at.
If I'm the Utes, I think, redshirt be damned, I'd be trying to get Jack Tuttle ready to go. He's a big time recruit. He's a guy that everybody believes in. And when he gets a chance, you know, he reminds me a little bit of when Chase Hansen was waiting in the wings when he was still a quarterback. Everybody wanted to see that happen. And he kind of reminds me of that Tuttle kind of has that anticipation. Is it smart to burn a red shirt at this point? Well, you know, Huntley's a guy that I just don't believe in him. I want to believe in him, but I'm with you. He can't even run the ball effectively, you know, and it's
nothing he can do effectively.
It's hard to watch when you have such a prolific running back who's been dinged up, and it seems like now he's starting to get healthy a little bit more, but you just have nothing from the quarterback position. I think this Stanford game is really important. If you can go to Stanford and figure out how to win on the road at the farm, it's not likely. But this is going to be a 2017 game. This will be one of those low-scoring games because these are two pretty good defenses. Although I think we saw that Stanford has some tackling issues and secondary issues. Notre Dame shredded them in the back end of their defense. I just don't think that the Utes can do that. They don't have the weapons at quarterback. And it's too bad because I think Britton Covey's as good as any possession receiver in football. He's a smaller guy. I think he's as good as any of those guys. I think Moss is a really good running back.
You have the tools. It's about the quarterback.
Yeah.
You can have the best hammer in your tool bag. If you don't have somebody who can swing it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. What do you think of the Pac-12 right now? I don't have a grasp on this conference at this point, especially the South. I think we all have a pretty good idea that Stanford and Washington are two pretty good clubs. I think Washington is an elite defense, and if Browning can play well, they're going to win the North. But you know you're always going to get a pretty good shot from Oregon. You know, Washington State, Cal, or Oregon State's terrible. I think California has a really good defense that not a lot of people know about. But I look at the South, Colorado. Colorado's probably the best team in the South right now, I would guess. But I look at USC. Arizona State's a hell of a lot better than I thought they would be with Herman in year one. Like, if you had to pick one team in the South, I mean, who winds up winning the South right now?
I would probably go with Arizona State just because they're in a good position. But I don't know. I would love to say Utah, but you don't. You're just not there. You're just not who you are.
Well, they're not the worst team in the South.
They're not the worst team.
No
question.
We're
not talking about who's the worst team. We're talking about who's the best team.
Well, and I think USC going to Arizona and winning was huge for JT Daniels. I think that was amazing. I think, you know, the performance they got out of Ware with those two touchdowns, burning clock, running clock, running the football.
I just don't think Khalil Tate is any kind of majestic athlete at this point because everybody knows how to stop you now.
Well, they've turned him into a passing quarterback.
But that's what happens. This is what we saw with Robert Griffin. This is what we saw with Johnny Manziel when he got to the next level. It just is happening to Khalil Tate earlier.
Yeah.
People know how to stop running quarterbacks. All you got to do is put a spy on him and emphasize stopping the quarterback. Because if you don't have weapons outside and you got that kind of guy who can run, that's what they're going to do. So if you make them pass, you can beat them.
Every team in the South is flawed. That's why
the Pac-12 is not in discussion nationally.
Yeah,
because you're not a good conference because you can't recruit because blah blah blah.
And the North actually is really flat. It's just a down football cycle for the Pac-12 right now. Maybe Washington obviously there's quality here, but Stanford's the real disappointment to me. I thought their defense would still be.
There's
better.
Not a team in the Pac-12 where you can circle them and be like, "Yep, they can beat anybody in the country."
No, line it up. And if you would. What do you have to lose by making a quarterback change right now? Obviously, a year of eligibility for Tuttle. Okay, yeah. I get that. What do you have to lose if you're Utah by making that change?
I don't think you have anything to lose. I think you're at rock bottom offensively. And it has nothing to do with guys like Moss or Covey. It has nothing to do with those guys. It has everything to do with the confidence you have. This is you know, the good example? This is the Cleveland Browns. When you took out Terod and you brought in Baker, everything changed.
Yep.
Because everybody believed in Baker, just the way they do in Tuttle.
Energy, enthusiasm, it automatically picks up. I agree with you on that. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Speaking of, and boy, there's Randy Rosario walking the leadoff hitter in the eighth. That's never good. Speaking of BYU, real quick, the story on Jimmer. What did you think of this? And if you didn't see it, it's on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Essentially, the story in short is an NBA scout said the only reason that Jimmer Fredette got a shot in the NBA is because he was white. and that the NBA was looking for the next great white player. When I first read that today, I was like, holy cow, that's ridiculous. And it really, it bothered me. Like, it really bothered me. And I started thinking about it, and I just can't find a rationale for it. I can't find a way that that makes sense. Because the NBA, I think, is one of the few leagues where race almost doesn't matter.
Nope.
If you can play, you're going to play. Whether you are Kobe, whether, you know, Porzingis, like, think of who, you know, Bennett with the Cavs got a huge shot. Like, I mean, just think Kevin of Love. Anybody. Kevin, like, it doesn't, but not even white. If you are a top pick in the draft, if you are drafted in the first round, you're going to get a shot to play and perform.
Yeah.
Jimmer got that shot, and the problem is Jimmer, when he was in the NBA, was not capable of defending. He wasn't a guy that could play any, he couldn't even play space. You know what I mean? Like, he just could not grasp defense. He's always going to be able to shoot. He's always going to be able to get up and down, but he just wasn't able to defend. That's really what it came down to. And I think this, you know, the idea that the NBA is looking for the next great white player, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, because I don't think the NBA has that problem. It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. Like, it's not a issue. You know, it's not. Yeah. It just isn't. This isn't. I mean, this is like saying that, you know, the NFL needs more white wide receivers. Like, we don't talk about that. Well, that's just not the discussion, and I think there's been a lot of great white players in the NBA. Steve Nash comes to mind. Dirk comes to mind. Like, there's a lot. Porzingis comes to mind. Like, there's a ton of guys who have been really good. So I don't know. Like, yeah, are you talking about, well, the NBA's never had just best player ever who's white?
Yeah.
Well, that may be true, but that doesn't mean the NBA needs the next great white player. Is Gordon Hayward not a great white player?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous.
You're stirring the pot, bro.
Jimmer was hot in college. He put on a show. At BYU. Yeah, he was the great underdog. He wasn't the great white hope. He was the great underdog.
Yeah.
You know, his ability to shoot and change games and dominate the NCAA tournament.
Just the Jimmer effect. In that, the Jimmer effect was not born because he could shoot a ball. The Jimmer effect was born because there was like a belief in him. He was almost a hero for that school. And so the idea that you would say that the NBA, you know, brought him into the league because they needed the next great white player. Jimmer was never going to be the next great white player. He may have been a good shooter, but he was never an all-around great player.
And he's not a guy who's ever been able to create a shot. You know, like, he is. Anyway, I think I think there's an interesting bias there that I think is just a bunch of crap. I think Jimmer's not playing in the NBA because, and if you want to say he wasn't athletic enough, whatever you want to say about him, he's not a creative offensive player and he can't defend. That's the bottom line. But does he work in China? Yes, and he's a huge deal in China. So why try to rain on that?
This is what we say, like, about centers in the league, like Rudy Gobert, not an offensive player. Can't play him at the end of the game. So we're going to rip him for that? No, like, I think at the end of the day, you're right. Jimmer's not in the league because he wasn't talented enough. His game was not good enough all around to play at that high of a level. So what did he do?
He made
life-changing money in China.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got kids, he's got a family, and he loves playing basketball. So
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, and that's what drives me crazy. There's a lot of haters there, and it just, I don't even know how you justify that. Speaking of the NBA, there's a little bit going on at Staples Center tonight. LeBron James makes his home debut for the Los Angeles Lakers. And the media made a big deal out of the fact that he took Kobe's old locker at Staples Center. Does that matter to you at all?
No.
I think it's incredibly symbolic.
Oh, for sure. And I want to say that I understand why people draw lines between the two. I get it. But let's not make this a thing where LeBron came to LA to beat Kobe or to, like, pave over Kobe's road. That's not what he's doing. He's came to LA for several reasons, and most of those reasons were off-the-court reasons.
Yes.
And I think it's that simple. Like, there's not LeBron. That's not who LeBron is. And I think a lot of people think LeBron is a guy who is going to LA because he wants to outshine Kobe. His banner in the rafters is going to be bigger than Kobe's.
Yes.
Like, his ring is going to be thicker than. Yeah. Like, it's just not who LeBron is. He's never been that guy.
He's there because of all of these entertainment deals that he's doing. Yeah. That's why he went to LA.
He's already making movies.
And the fact of the matter is, his kid is thriving at this basketball school that he's going to. Like, I mean, there's no reason. LA is a great fit for him.
The choice was a generational choice.
Yes.
Like, he's already made generational money. And if you don't know what that means that Bronny's kids won't have to worry about money.
Correct.
That's how much money LeBron James has made in his life.
Correct.
So money isn't the thing. It's about the fact that, yeah, like, while we're on Bronny, yeah, Bronny has a better path now. Unlike what LeVar did, LeBron actually made the right choice and put Bronny in a great position to be successful and to continue growing in his career. And at the same time, pleased his wife by moving to LA because she wanted to live there. And at the same time, furthered his off-the-court aspirations after his career. So, it, like, every box was checked. And let me tell you, Kobe's locker was not on the list.
By the way, did you see how LeBron got home from San Diego?
Chopper?
Yeah, flew a helicopter.
That's very Kobe.
Yeah, because how did Kobe get from Newport Beach to L.A.? He flew in a helicopter.
Yeah.
So I think it makes a lot of sense, and I understand why it's a storyline. And I am a Laker fan. I haven't said that very much. Yeah. It is not hard to be a Laker fan. It is not hard to hate the Lakers, too, by the way. But I'm not a LeBron fan. I've always said that he doesn't win enough. I've always said that his legacy will always be tied to his record in the NBA Finals. It's awkward to me to see him in a Laker uniform. And it's not one of those things who... It's going to be awkward because I do think they win a championship with him next year.
Yes.
Not this year. I think next year. I think they're middle of the playoff. Like, I think there's only 8 teams in the West. Everybody else, if you can't be top 8 in a conference, I think they're middle of that 8 teams. I think they're 4 or 5. And that's because, like, there's a bunch of rebuilding teams. They're not the Warriors. And I have no idea what the Rockets are going to be this year, by the way. There's some interesting stuff there.
I don't think so either. Still.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Who knows what Carmelo does there, but whatever. They're a 4 or 5 in the West. That's who they are now. 45 to 50 wins. We'll see what Lonzo does, because if he's healthy, I think they're a much different team. If he's shooting well, their biggest Achilles heel, by the way, the Lakers, is jump shooting, without question. That's why Kuz is so important to them. Brandon Ingram is so important to them.
I still think they're a player away still. They've got to
no question.
More.
Yeah. But they're going to win. I think they're capable. Their maximum, I think, is 49-50 wins.
Yeah.
They're not a 55-win team.
Well, the thing now is that now it's all on Pelinka and Magic to go out and get somebody else, because they are not going to win enough to draft.
Correct. That's a really good point. They are going to win too much to draft. They're not going to lose enough to draft. So, yeah, it's going to require a contract next summer. It's going to require a savvy move at the deadline. That's not going to handicap you in free agency.
And by the way, it's only going to help because guys know that they won't be here next year if they're not good.
You know what the interesting thing about the Lakers also is, though? I think it is very telling that Rondo, Stevenson, and Lance and LeBron, everybody knows that history. The guys that came there, like JaVale leaving Golden State, well, they signed Boogie. JaVale could have had a job. In a lot of places.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, guys still to this day want to play with LeBron.
Yes, and I think the Lakers are a brand. They're an attractive brand.
There's
and
no
then,
doubt.
Then you put LeBron into that mix, and I think they're a very attractive brand.
Yeah, I mean, why was JaVale working as hard as he was all offseason? I mean, he looks good.
Yeah, well, him and Zubik are not going to be good enough in the middle.
No.
So, anyway, here nor there. I'll never get used to LeBron in that uniform, I don't think. I think it's interesting he took Kobe's old locker, and I give him a lot of credit for that, because it would have been easy not to, I guess is the way. Like,
well, he's carrying the torch, it should be said. I don't know why people got to look at this negatively. Kobe was and is, in my opinion, the greatest Laker. I mean, he's the greatest Laker there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron is the best player they've had since Kobe.
But he's not a Laker.
Not yet, he's not a Laker.
Yeah, LeBron's
he's got to win, and then he'll be a Laker.
His jersey should never be in the rafters at Staples.
I would agree with that, because all those guys up there, I believe all those guys were lifers, weren't they? Everybody that's up there, for the most part, has pretty much been a lifer.
Yeah, essentially. You know, you have to be an icon.
Yeah.
You know, and LeBron will never be a Laker icon. He is a Cleveland Cavalier or a Miami Heat. Like, if the Heat want to retire his number, I get that.
How many rings does he need to win for that to change? Three?
He could win three, but it'd need to be a three-peat. He needs to build a dynasty on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And if he wins three and doesn't lose in the finals and builds something new, okay, I get it. Maybe Bronny comes in, replaces LeBron. Like, okay, I can see that.
Do you think they play on the same team? I think that's a stretch still to this
day. I think LeBron's too old and Bronny's too young. I think there's just too much of a gap there.
Yeah.
Because LeBron doesn't want to be Mike at the end of his career. What Michael was at the end of his career was not good. I hated watching him play for the Wizards. Hated that. Hated that. All kinds of different ways hated that. So I don't think LeBron wants to be that. But we'll see. I mean, his kid is really good. That's the bottom line. So he will play in the NBA. By the way, real quick, one other basketball story. The LaMelo situation in Lithuania. The JBA USA team, they took the best players that they had out of the JBA, which is LaVar's professional league for these young guys. And they're touring Europe right now. And they're in Lithuania. And they're playing against one of the better teams in the top division of Lithuania, basketball. And they're crushing them, right? In the third quarter, they're up, I think it was 16 or something like that.
Yeah, it was like 69 to 54.
Yeah, it was big. And LaMelo Ball goes in for a layup and gets hit. He gets fouled driving the paint. And the guy who fouled him walks up behind him. He's the best player on the Lithuanian team they're playing. Walks up behind him and taps him on the back of the head. Like, it's something that we see a lot.
In Europe, you see it.
Yeah.
You don't see it here.
And LaMelo did not like that, and he full-on, open-handed, slapped that kid right in the face. And a brawl broke out. Now, to his credit, Clamato Ball, or whatever his name is, LiAngelo, was the first guy there to defend his brother, which I thought that was cool. But Is this a mark against him? Is this, like, because the game was kind of chippy? Is this a mark against LaMelo?
Nah, I think it shows he's gritty and he's not going to take it from anybody. And I think if you can't continue to slap people, but I think if you do that once, you know.
You're sending a message.
Yeah.
He's much better. He's gotten much more physically advanced.
He's
lifted weights. Well, it's not even like he grew as a man. He was a spaghetti string. He's got shoulders and traps and biceps and triceps now. Like, the kid legitimately worked. And I'm sorry to say this, I watch Ball in the Family. Him and Lonzo worked out together, lifted together. Like, they worked out hard together. And you can see it because he's dunking on people now. Last year, you might remember, in Lithuania, he could not dunk. In the game, he couldn't dunk. And he's just exploded now physically. And so his shot's better. His ability to get to the rack is better. He's an excellent passer now. And now I think he's actually gotten, like, intimidated. He's intimidating older men. He's intimidating grown adult males, which I think is a big tip of the cap for him. So I find that interesting. Couple other things real quick. Last sports thing. NFL Sunday Ticket could be leaving DirecTV after the 2019 season. Larry Scott of the Pac-12, I hope you're listening. NFL Sunday Ticket is likely leaving DirecTV after 2019. And one of the top bidders is expected to be Google, who bid on it last time around and didn't get it. They're talking about putting it on YouTube TV. It's only $1.5 million a year. I say only. DirecTV pays $1.5 million a year for the Sunday Ticket.
That seems low.
It does. I want to double check that.
I feel like that should be at least, like, I don't know, my gut says
maybe
five,
I'm wrong about that, or I misread
1.5,
that.
Like, Yeah, whatever the number is, it would be badass if it was on YouTube TV, mainly because everybody and their brother can afford that. YouTube TV is like $10 a month, yeah, or whatever it is, you know, and obviously you'd have to pay more to get the Sunday ticket, I'm sure, and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you're not paying $100 a month for DirecTV and your internet and this and that. Like, you're paying $10 a month for YouTube TV, you're paying for your internet, and then you probably pay a little extra to get the Sunday ticket.
Oh, it's $1 billion a year. My
bad. Oh, just look, Trump.
I read
fine.
That
it's,
in.
It doesn't
in,
matter.
I read that in Forbes today that they were paying $1.5 million a year.
Well, that was a typo.
Yeah, I think it was Forbes. Anyway, they're paying $1.5 billion a year.
Yeah, that's more like it
for that.
Yeah,
I could easily see Google doing that and making it a premium service on YouTube TV. If DirecTV loses the Sunday ticket, are you cutting the cord?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
And what? Let me just tell you, the Cubs have tied the game. And it was none other than Javier Baez who tied the game, but how did he do it? Anthony Rizzo got a base hit, and they pinch ran for him. I can't remember the kid's name, the base running specialist, the short little guy, Gore?
Terrence Gore.
Terrence Gore. Terrence Gore steals second base and then scores on the Baez single to make it 1-1 in the bottom of the eighth. Two outs, runner on second
Yelich.
Base. Whatever. Screw you, Yelich. I told
slide
you.
Down your
I told
asshole.
You Baez was the MVP. Sorry, I'll stop. Anyway, the point is, I think it's interesting that Google's talking about doing this.
I think it's brilliant. This is everything you need to be doing in this day and age. I'm telling you. And there will come a time when you do this. DirecTV will not be winning for the rest of eternity. Google is coming. They've been coming. Like the way Netflix has grown, the way all these other brands have grown, Google is going to package that into one, and they're going to make it very cheap.
Oh, I found the typo. It was, look, and I want you to look at this right here. Read what that says. DirecTV to pay the league $1.5 million a year.
Hmm.
Bro Bible via Business Insider made
owned.
The mistake. Okay, good. So
owned.
Because I was thinking like I'm an idiot or something. Anyway, if NFL Sunday Ticket leaves DirecTV, are you cutting the cord?
Yeah.
I think that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
How much you pay for DirecTV a month?
Do I have to say? I pay about $70 a month. I don't want to say how much I pay because I pay an insanely low amount. But I pay what the standard fee is.
Okay.
I just get some perks.
Yeah.
Let's put
whatever.
It that way. I love DirecTV.
So
I've had DirecTV for...
Let me ask you this. What would the price be? Like straight up. It would be well over 100, wouldn't it? Because if you had...
For what?
So
the DirecTV package?
DirecTV, if I was ordering DirecTV... I would have the Sunday ticket. I would certainly have the baseball package.
Yeah, you'd be paying about $300 a year.
I'd have
a month.
NBA for sure.
Yeah, you'd be paying about $399 a month.
Okay, so $399 versus I'm curious what this will be. If they get it,
it'll be somewhere around $40 a month because
plus the package.
No,
right?
No, it's not, I think YouTube TV is $19.99 a month. And then you have to buy premium add-ons.
Okay, so I would be under 100.
So you're well, you could have all of the leagues if they had rights to them and be well under that. The thing is, they have baseball games. They have local channels. Like, YouTube TV is really well done. Really well done. So it's way more affordable than cable or DirecTV.
Mm-hmm.
But DirecTV gives you so much. And my wife's a huge Amazon media consumer. I mean, it's amazing what she watches on Amazon, Netflix. Frankly, unless you're a sports fan, I don't know why you pay for cable.
Don't know.
Why would you do that?
Don't know.
So, all right, before we get out of here, what do you think about this Donald Trump tax fraud story? Now, tomorrow, you know, in about 12 hours, a little more than 12 hours, we're all going to get our first presidential text where the Federal Emergency Management Administration is going to send out a text that will test the federal emergency text system.
Yeah, it'll say vote Trump.
Yeah, if there's a 9/11, there's going to be a text that says terrorist attack, whatever it is. But Donald Trump, a lot of people are worried that he is going to take control of that system. And truth be told, he's not going to have day-to-day access to it. But there are scenarios where he could send out texts. I'm not that concerned about it because, as it was pointed out today on NBC, it is against the law for him to use that for anything other than, hey, major
disaster.
But he
can pardon himself.
But, and that was my point, who's going to enforce the law against, you know, DJT? Like, I don't know who's going to do that. Like, Donald Trump can pardon himself, which is the Kavanaugh argument, by the way. But did you hear that frickin' story? Anyway, don't get me started on Kavanaugh again. Point is, do you think we ever see a day where Donald Trump snatches control of the FEMA text system?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I think it's just too far.
You'll get a text tomorrow around 11 Pacific that's going to say, this is a test.
Delete.
Yeah, here's this is a text, or a test of this text system. I don't think he would ever do that. Actually, who am I kidding? He's going to do it. How long until we get a no collusion, that was fake news, or...
Lock her up,
or vote for me in 2020, greatest economy ever, vote for me in 2020, DJT. You know what I mean? Like, I could see that happening. I don't think it's...
I just can't. It just seems very far-fetched. And if it does happen, then I'll say I'm not surprised.
Okay. That works. And then there's the Donald Trump tax evasion explosion that happened today thanks to our friends at the New York Times. Did you hear this story where... So Donald Trump is famous for saying that he is self-made. I'm a self-made guy. Earned all my money. My dad didn't give me very much at all. Well, the New York Times got hold of tax returns from his family, and it turns out that Donald Trump's parents transferred $1 billion to their children and should have paid 55% inheritance tax on that money. So they got $1 billion, and they should have had to pay $550 million of that in tax. Instead, they paid 5%, or just $52 million. And these tax documents say that almost all of Donald Trump's personal wealth is inherited, and almost none of it is self-made.
Yeah, it's awful. Absolutely awful.
So you do care?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it just add it to the list. And at this point, I shouldn't say it's a list. Add it to the book that never ends that continues to be printed of ways he's a despicable human being.
Did you see the latest numbers that he lies now? His lies are up to 8.3 times per day. And he's told over 5,000 lies since he got elected.
That's who he is as a human being.
First of all, who's getting paid to track his lies?
I don't know, but I want that job.
Do you really?
It's a great job.
I guess. He lies 8.3 times a day. That's stunning.
Yeah, he's our president. Great job, guys. Nice job.
Wow, so this... Really good job. I thought I would get the passive millennial.
No, I mean, look... You're never going to get passive on him being a complete douchebag, along with Kavanaugh and everybody else.
There's no way Kavanaugh can be on the Supreme Court. You just can't. You just can't do it. And the Cubs leave the lead run at third base on a strikeout on a pitch a mile outside. But they're tied at one going to the ninth.
Yeah. They'll still lose, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
They suck. It's over. The world's coming to an end.
Fire Theo.
All right, there you go. Okay, that's fine. See, why poke the bear on this stuff?
I'm not poking the bear. I'm just telling you how it is. I'm a realist.
Love you, buddy. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show, TheMontyShow.com. And, of course, anywhere you get your podcast, just search The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Tomorrow on the show, top five and bottom five in the National Football League. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.